Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us again this Thursday evening here on Black Talk Radio Network with Blacks in Business Radio. You can listen in online at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com or call in at 1-866-510-9025 or by calling 704-802-5056. So let's go ahead and get into tonight's show. We are going to talk about business basics, just do it, balancing and having it all, and our guests can talk about that, and also about shaking the haters off. And our wonderfully talented guest tonight is Zadakia Nzinga Terrell. She is a wonderfully talented painter and artist from Denver, Colorado, who is currently living in the D.C. area. So we are going to let her tell you all about that. I'm going to get her on the line now. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
I'm so excited to be on. I'm good. How about
yes.
you?
I'm good. I'm excited to have you on. So before we get
started. Yes, because we have the best talks anyway.
We do. And I'm a fan too. So why don't you get started? So I told them briefly about you, but why don't you go ahead and tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you online?
Well, my name is Zadakia Terrell, and everybody calls me Day, though, so it's a mouthful. You can call me Day. And I am a visual artist and artist businesswoman in Washington, D.C. I do merchandising, special arts events, festivals, pop-up shops, curating. If painting is involved, I do it. I sew a little bit. I'm kind of just an all-around crafter and have been able to really flip it into a successful business and then build it to incorporate my family as well. So I have
so what role
a new
does
website.
Your family play?
Mm-hmm. Right now, they're a little bit of everything. So originally, when I started my business, it was just me. I've always been a businesswoman. I was selling earrings to the kids when I was in second grade. That's always been my thing. And when I met my husband is a painter as well. And he's the first physical artist. I always like musicians, so he's also a musician, but I always like you know, pianist and guitar players was always my thing. So, you know, he's the first painter. You know, okay. we love the artistic types, not the same type.
Yeah.
So he's right. the first painter that I dated. And I, you know, as we got closer and closer, I've always had different little merchandising things happening with my art because I don't really do well in, like, 9-to-5 settings. I can work for about 8 months and then I quit. That's just my
okay.
MO. And so, you know, I was like, I can't.
Actually.
Yes. And I'll tell y'all the business. I'll keep it real. I hope he doesn't listen back and be like, is she serious? But so when he and I got married, it's in our family's best interest for everybody's art to sell. And it was a little bit of a struggle for me at first to kind of figure out how to balance it, because especially as a Black woman in a visual arts and business field, and a married woman, it's easy to have your identity usurped.
Okay, so before we get there, because that is definitely like the topic that we're going to talk about the second half of the hour, but before we jump all the way to that, we're going to back up just a little bit. So I heard you say you've been selling earrings since the second grade. So my question for you, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of people, and I've been having these conversations a lot lately, where people want to start a business and they are so scared to start a business, and they think that it really is this super complicated process. And I'm like, you know, if you have an idea, just like Nike says, just do it. Go.
Yes. Sell it.
Because you'll never know if it's going to work until you try it. Like, you don't know that you have a viable business idea until you do it.
And sometimes you start out with something and it doesn't all the way work, and then you tweak it and figure it out
and
to, like,
how
okay to get a good
momentum.
Oh, yeah. And
so
I think that sometimes those accents lead us to the best business structures.
Right. Because it definitely does not necessarily happen in this very linear, straight line fashion that most people would assume that it happens in. So it's like, you know, research the industry or the craft or the skill that you want to turn into a business or service, and figure out, like, okay, what is it that you don't know? And again, it's like, we can't get, what do people call it? Like, you know, you can't get paralyzed.
Okay,
so you know what?
So glad that you brought that up. Because I think that when I talk to people about business, the number one thing that they do is they ask me questions that they should look up. They'll ask me, you know, when they're talking about, well, how do you start a business, you know, and I'll ask them, well, what kind of business do you want to start? And they don't know anything about it. And, but, you know, my first thing is always
trendy.
Like, yes. And still not know anything about it, or just like, oh, well, you know, I Photoshopped some words on a T-shirt that a picture of Beyonce on the computer, and now I'm just going to sell this T-shirt. And, I mean, okay, but there's ways to appropriately sell a T-shirt with a saying on it quickly without having to steal somebody's image, though. And a lot of people just don't want to do the work and figuring out how their business actually works. And
because
a lot of people
it's trendy
don't
right now.
Ready. Yeah.
Right. It's trendy to say
you know,
that
you're
an entrepreneur.
Pull yourself up.
Right. And it's trendy to say that you own a business and all of these things. And people really just don't have the basics. And to get started on a business, I mean, it's really simple to have a web presence. It is very simple to, and it may seem like for somebody who may not be, like, technically savvy, that can be intimidating to tackle that. People, you know, even having conversations, and we can talk because you've done this, even as far as people pricing what they're worth and telling, especially people who are artists, that they don't charge enough. And I had this conversation, matter of fact, this past week with a young lady who I bought something from her. And I could not believe, and so I wasn't going to say anything because, like, Erica, she didn't ask you anything, like, be quiet, you know, but I ended up asking, I was like, you know, how much are your materials, and how long does it take you to paint these things when you paint them? So then I told her, I said, okay, so let's just give a rough estimate. So that means that you're paying yourself roughly $10 an hour.
Ah, yes.
And you're doing
a lot
of work.
Which is like below minimum wage.
Right. And it's like you're doing a lot of work.
And that's the other thing I tell people too, is that they'll say, you know, well, I charge this, and I, you know, they'll ask me, well, how do you know how much to charge? And that's my first thing is like, well, what do you charge per hour? And people are like, well, what do you mean? And they'll say things like that. Oh, you know, I charge $10 an hour. And I say, well, you know, that's below minimum wage. Blue people at Target make more than that. Why are you going to have your own business and put all your skill set into it, and you're sitting on the bus next to somebody who's, like, trying to find themselves, and they have their job at McDonald's, like, and no diss to people who have, you know, hard-working jobs and what have you, but, like, at the very minimum, shouldn't you have minimum wage? And then, and a lot of times, these are people who are college-educated.
Whatever your pricing structure is, and this is how I started to break it down for people, I was like, how many bills do you have? What's the cheapest bill you have? Everything you do should be able to pay a bill in your house. Everything you do. Every project. And it was funny because the young lady ended up saying to me, well, if I raise my prices, nobody's going to buy it. I said, well, how many do you sell right now per week? So she told me, I said, so think about this. You raise your price several hundreds of dollars, and if you sell one in a month, do you care? You sold.
Right.
You know,
oh, bills paid.
Right. And she's just like, and I said, I'm not telling you what to do. It's just, I'm planting a seed. It's something to think about. And I've met so many artists who will price their work at $50. And then when you ask them why they priced it at $50, they say, because I want somebody to buy it.
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, so for
$50,
you know,
I've been there too.
But the thing is, some of them aren't even desperate, and they're highly talented people. When we both know, being in this art field, there's trash out there that sells.
Oh, girl.
Thousands. You know? So finding out from people, like, it comes back to their self-worth. And sometimes that pricing structure really tells you more about where somebody is self-esteem-wise, because you'll also hear people say, well, I don't charge a lot because I'm new. But when you go buy those supplies,
they cost just
and you're
same.
Doing your business, right, they're not letting you pay less because you're new. So it's like, charge what you're worth.
You know, I also think that there's an element of, particularly in the Black community, berating people for charging. Because that's one thing that I consistently, I don't think I've done an event in the last year where I haven't had to say to at least one person, we are a luxury brand, period.
Period.
And,
and a lot of times, I think, be confident in
that. And a lot of times we get the side eye from Black folks and they go into that whole, you know, Michael Jordan, your stuff, people in the hood can't afford it. And no, they cannot. I don't have hood
they can't, but they buy it.
They do buy it. They certainly
people
buy
save
it.
Up
they
their
save
coins,
up their money just like
and
anybody
they buy
else. And they buy. And we are a luxury brand. And I think that starting to use that language was one of the really big turning points for me in business. And because people understand what that means. And, you know, I let them know, like, no, this is Macy's. This is not Walmart. So you're not going to get a $10 pair of jeans from me. You'll get an $85 pair of jeans
that's
from me, and you'll
that
see it reflected
in
the quality.
Because I recently made that turn, too, in the last probably 6 months or so, just embracing it. Like, you know, it's just fact. It just is fact, and it is what it is. And having those conversations with people, and I'm like, okay, so you have people who either, as business owners, either we want Walmart shoppers or we want the people that are going to Saks Fifth Avenue and Barney's.
Right.
You know, so it's and even like you say, Macy's, and I'm like, nope, we're going to kick it up a notch.
Right.
You know, and
you
go
get that
and go
Taylor going.
Right. So it's like, okay.
Yes. But, you know, they
Let's
don't think that
there.
Black people support that. As well as I think when you have Black business, there's an idea that your purchasers are exclusively Black. And, you know, I was telling the brother today, because he was asking, like, well, how are you guys maintaining that? You know, black folks don't have money, this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, black folks spend money on a lot of things, actually. And we don't exclusively sell to black people. Even though we exclusively do black art, white people love our work.
Right.
And, you know, we know who our market is and we utilize our market. But a lot of people like
our
work.
But then it's also about art and a different appreciation. Because we've done a few events where we're next to people who are selling things for a dollar.
Oh, God, girl.
And then people come over to us. And it's like, well, how much is that painting? $1,500. But theirs is a dollar. Okay.
Yes.
You know, and it's just like, I don't know what you want me to say to that. And they feel, the people who are selling their work for a dollar, because people are eating it up and they had a lot of sales, feel accomplished.
They think they're doing
and
good.
And I don't knock them. And I'm like, okay, but how much money did you spend to get those dollar prints made?
Yes.
They're all like 11 by 17, 14 by
yes.
20, all of that.
Yes.
How much did, because you didn't get those for a dollar. So let's just have some good business basics from jump, like understanding your numbers, what's your cost of doing business, figure all those things out. And I'm not saying that it has to be perfect for you to get started, because it most certainly doesn't. Because last show, we had Crystal Carmen on, and she talked about that, how her business just was not perfect. It wasn't. But she started where she was with what she has.
Right,
and that is the key. Yes, it's just like, start with where you are. Do not let the fact that you don't have thousands of dollars to start prevent you from starting. Even if the only thing you can start doing is blog. Right, it's like,
yes.
Even if all you can do is blog and go talk to people, interview people, spotlight people who are in the industry that you want to be in. If that's how you have to get your feet wet, then start there.
Do it.
But start.
Do it.
You know? Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things
steps.
For us. Yes. We have goals that we set every year. So, you know, every year our prices shift. Every year our focus shifts based on things that we're learning and things and that we're researching. And as, you know, you're meeting other business owners and you're seeing other business models, we adjust. And we listen
right.
to what other people are doing, and we talk about, you know, what's working for people, what's not working for people, and we make adjustments. You know, our business is never the same. I think that one thing that really helped me was my dad told me to find out what banks give business loans for the type of business that you had and get the application and fill out the application, because it helps you really visualize what the numbers are for the type of business that, you know, you're trying to put together. And doing that really, you know, I wasn't even at the point where I was submitting the application, but just looking at it and just like going piece by piece and being like, I have this, I don't have this, I know this, I don't know this. You know, this is asking me for market research comparisons. Like, I don't know who else sells what I sell, and understanding like, well, maybe I should go look. Maybe I should jump on Google and type in what it is that I'm doing and see how other people are doing it and what is the price point and what's
now,
the market for that looking like.
So you bring that up. Now, when you go look at your competitors, and we're not going to say necessarily who they are, but when you look at people who are in the realm of what you're doing, do you look at other black businesses, or do you look at other artists who are doing something similar to what you're doing?
Ooh.
Regardless of who they
so this
are.
This is a tricky one. So I definitely look at all, I don't exclusively look at black businesses. I think of my business as a black business because I'm black, and it's always going to be a black business, and I'm very proud about that. But I'm not in competition with just black people, and I'm not seeking just black customers. So I'm going to look at, you know, how everybody is putting their business together. And one thing that I noticed is that I learned some things when I was dealing with some of the white artists about different ways that they approached, getting money for their art. Like, I met a woman, for example, who, if you want a piece from her, she won't even meet with you unless you pay $500. Because she was like, I'm tired of having meetings with people who don't show up, or they're not serious, or, you know, you spend 3 hours talking to somebody about all their ideas, and then they never, you know, take action for their ideas, and that costed me time. And so, you know, right. It's a $500 deposit just to sit down with her. Like, she only wants, and it weeds out people who are not super serious. And, you know, like, right. Learning different people's business models and different approaches, like, that's something that applies across all colors, across all cultures. Like, if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. And, you know, and that's something that it took me. I had to get past my mad black phase to get to that point. You know, I definitely started out like, no, we sell for black people, and this is black, and woo-dee-woo. But at the end of the day, like, I'm a business. I'm trying to grow. And, you know, I'm not trying to limit my business to one group, into one group's economics.
So now how
I think
you,
that's because understanding your people.
Mm-hmm. So now when you say your people, so are you saying like your customer base, your client base? Because
my demographic.
Right, because your demographic on your, because you have a very lively social media life. And there are always popping conversations and dialogues happening in your spaces. And it is from a variety of people. It is a very eclectic group that partakes in these discussions. So
even the black-centered discussions.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that's really important, is that white people will come and weigh in on some black-centered conversations.
Yes, all the time, and insert themselves, and yes, it does not always end well.
No,
but
no.
So what my question is, okay, so back to looking at your competitors, because I know typically when I go out to do research, not just on people who may be where Foxy currently is, but where I want Foxy to go, and the steps that we're taking to get Foxy to the place that I ultimately see it. Some of the brands aren't even in the United States. Like, their base is not even in the United States. But they have a global presence. And just the way that their websites are put together, the user experience on the website, because that's something else that sometimes I don't know from a business perspective, again, but just the basics, sitting down and figuring out, okay, when someone comes to your website, what is it you want them, what do you want that experience to look like? And sometimes people are just like, I just need a website. I just need to get a website up and put some stuff up and don't take the time to really figure out, like, who is my brand? What is my brand persona? Like, make your brand a person. And what type of personality does your business have? Because you essentially are raising a baby.
Yes. I love on Project Runway, they always talk about it like that. You know, Tim will ask them, you know, he'll be like, who's your person? And they'll be like, well, you know, I designed for Tina, and Tina is punk rock goth, but she's black, and she's on her way to Afro punk or to a black tie gala, but she wants to still rep her style, and she likes this. She listens to this music. Like, there is a person that you have in mind.
Right.
Which also helps, you know, I always tell people, especially in sales, to do festivals. Because when you start doing festivals, I've been doing festivals for probably 15 years now, and I see my people coming from across the grass. Like, I don't even engage everybody anymore. I see I know who's my buyer. I see in how they're carrying themselves. I see in their look, black, white, Asian, you know, whatever. It's, you know, we had an old lady walk by, the old white lady, but she had, like, hot pink on the edge of her white hair, and she had her little shirt tied up and stuff, and she was looking all extra and fly, and that's my person. And so, you know, I know that's who I'm going to engage, and that's what I'm looking for. That is who my client is. My client, you know, and I had people, especially when I first moved to D.C., because it's more of a conservative city than where I was from, and, you know, people would be like, this is a little much for me. And, like, well, you know what? That's not my client, and that's fine. And you don't have to be intimidated by that. You just sometimes have to put yourself in a place where your client is, or especially on social media, attract your client and lock your client
in. Also being comfortable in knowing that if you, not even comfortable in knowing, understanding that from a business perspective, if you're selling to everybody, you're selling to nobody. Like,
right.
Your business is not for everybody, and that's okay.
Yes. It
that is
not
absolutely,
be.
Utterly okay.
Definitely should not be. And I think that goes back to pricing, too. You know, like, your price point, it should help isolate, you know, who is your person. And
right.
You should not be intimidated and standing beside, you know, this is who I'm trying to sell to. And, you know,
right.
I always have people come up that try to pop off about my prices and what have you, and I'm just very calm with them, like, well, you know, that's fine. If you're not my client, you're not my client.
There right. was a young lady that actually we did a festival recently, and I wore a fuchsia wig to the festival, right? And I had a young lady come up. She was also a vendor, and she was very offended at the fact that I had on a fuchsia wig, because she told me that it was a brand mismatch, and how dare I have on this fuchsia wig talking about natural hair, and how could all my ladies have all my afros, where's my afro, how come I don't look like my art? And I said to her, I said, you know, the wig won because I wanted to, but really,
right.
I was like,
and that's my brand.
The wig stands out. The wig stands out. Guess what? You won't forget it.
Right? You came
I
over
was like,
here.
People have noticed me today in this wig. Do you know how many people
yes.
I've walked past that have been like, oh my God, I love that wig. It's so fun. This and that, blah, blah. That is my brand. Because my brand
right.
is about Black women being who they are in all their forms.
But
it's all of that.
Yes.
You know, and just being
yes.
comfortable in your own skin. But she was really like, you know, you don't have natural hair. And it's like, and I didn't want to beat my mom. It's looking at me like, oh my gosh, what is my child about to say to this woman? But, you know, I kept it very professional. But in my mind, I was like, she's not your customer. She's not your client. And that's okay. Because even if I had my natural hair, she was not going to buy from me.
No. No, and that's when people
certain.
Look for reasons to critique.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always, like,
yeah.
that turns me all the way off. And I'm not desperate
because people
for anybody
will look for
dollars.
An excuse not to buy. And it's just like, guess
oh,
what? You could just,
yes.
you don't have to buy, and it's okay. When you go to the store, you don't make excuses for the brands that are on the shelves of why you're not buying something. You're just not.
Right.
You know, if
right.
you're walking in the mall, you don't go in every store in the mall. Or go in every shop in a shopping center. You know,
and even the
like
shop
you
go into, you might not like everything in there. Everything in there is not
right.
going to fit right on you. Everything in there, you might like something that's just that isn't flattering to you, whether you like it or not.
Right. Or basically, you walk in and it's like, okay, this isn't me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not your taste or whatever, and you leave. So, and it's like, that's all right too. It's like there are 7 billion people on the planet. You just need a few
yes.
of them. You know,
exactly.
to have a successful business. And it's like, and your business and your customer base and your client base is bigger than your current social circle. So that's something
very
else
right.
as a business basic. You got to get out of your comfort zone, because the people around you may not be willing, because they know you, may not be willing to spend that you're asking.
Right.
And guess what? That's okay, too. Because most of us
yes.
that are in business will tell you firsthand, your family and those closest to you are the last ones to come around.
Yes, they want the
9 times out of 10. They want the hookup.
They always
and
want
they
the
are going to be your loudest, sometimes, naysayers. They are going to
yes.
be the main people telling you can't do it.
Yes.
Or that you shouldn't
very
do it.
Much.
Or that, you know, you need to have cheaper prices.
Yes.
You know? Because
oh,
my
yes.
mother gets to me all the time, like, oh my gosh, y'all charge so much. And I was like, Mom, I love you. You are not my target demographic. I love you, though. I do.
Yes. Yes, I definitely have a lot of people like that too, that are, and it's definitely the closest people to you that don't get it, mm-hmm. and that don't get it for from a lot of levels, and I think when you're an artist, right. it's a little bit tougher because most people assume that art is not a viable business. And, you know, so when you're saying, well, you know, I'm a painter, and they're just kind of side-eyeing you like, oh, well, you know, how does that even work? And they think your paintings are all $40, and you're saying, no, mm-hmm. my paintings start at $1,500, and they think there's nobody who buys things like that. And you're like, well, I own a home, so obviously somebody is buying art. There's galleries and museums in every city mm-hmm. in this country. Somebody is buying art, you know. I think it makes it a little bit more... You know, I would tell people, too, with their business, having a business is like having a baby at home. Like, you just don't tell everybody. You know, like, you don't mention to a lot of people that you have a business. I think that people ask inappropriate questions when you say you have a business and that it's okay to shut them down. Like, people will ask mm-hmm. me how much I make, how do I pay my bills, things like that. And I'm just like, have you ever gone to Macy's and asked a lady selling you shoes how much she makes? Because she would slap you. Like, it's not appropriate. Right. And being okay with being like, I don't have to disclose these things to you to feel like I am as successful as I know that I am. You know, you end up having to be kind of thick-skinned. And then I think that people offer criticism that have no concept of business. And, you know, that's one of the hardest things to do.
I call them armchair CEOs.
Yeah.
And I tell people, they're like, well, what do you say when people give you suggestions on your business that don't fit your business, that are things you don't do? And I said, you know, I said, I've gotten to the point where I, with a smile, say to them very nicely, you know, that's an awesome idea. You should do that.
Yes. Yes.
You should make that happen.
Yes.
And I was like, that's just a really nice way to, because you don't have to, we always feel like we have to explain ourselves and get that outside validation. And being a business owner, sometimes that feedback is great because people do give you really good insight, but then sometimes you have to listen to your own spirit.
Yes.
And know what you know is the right thing to do.
You are trying to do. Yes. Because a lot of times, you know, even with the best meant advice, even the best meant advice, sometimes they don't have any concept of what your original vision is, where you're trying to take it, you know, like, and people feel like, you know, everybody has all kind of advice for what you need to do next and where you need to go next and who you need to talk to mm-hmm. next. And, you know, and definitely feeling not obligated to explain to everybody every little movement that you're making.
Right. And I will say this.
And not to receive every critique either.
Right. And I will say, even though I said my mom is not my demographic, my mother will show up and work festivals with me and go to events and be here and you know, keep the grandchildren and all of those things. So, not to sound like that, you know, because I don't want somebody listening.
No, it's not.
Like,
and that's one thing
about her mother.
No. And, you know, I think that's one thing that people need to be really clear about in terms of their business is that, like, it's okay for somebody to not be your demographic. Like, it's 100% okay to be like, you know, I'm not selling to this type of person. Like, that's fine. Right. That's not it's not a diss to that person. It's not a put down to that person. You know, it's just like with my family's art, we're abstract pop artists. You know, we do portraits, they're abstracts, and they're really bright color. And not everybody wants that kind of color in their house. Like, some people are really agitated by it. And so they're not going to buy from us, but that's not them trying to disrespect our business. And when we say, like, okay, well, you're just not our customer, that's not us trying to disrespect them as buyers. Because down the line, you know, they might buy something for somebody else, or we might come out with a new product that later on, they might get. You know, we have a wide variety of price points now, but there was a time where we didn't have as much of, you know, I didn't have as much $10 things. I had a lot of, like, it's $100 and up, you know, and so you just have to be really firm about, you know, these are my people, and I know my people, and that's who I'm selling to, and not feeling like you have to downgrade that to make anybody else feel included, because at the end of the day, they're not buying your supplies, they're not putting in the effort and the hours for it, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what it ultimately comes down to.
So I want to touch on something that you said earlier when you were doing your intro, and you said your family is involved in your business. So let's talk about, like, balancing all of that, having children, having a husband, because there may be somebody listening that really wants to get started and have a business, but they say, okay, how can I do this? You know, say I have all these other responsibilities, I work full time, I have, you know, children, I have a spouse, all these other things going on. How could I possibly have time to then also start a business?
Oh, yeah.
So what would you tell somebody?
Learn to multitask. Multitasking is everything. And also, the little things matter. I think that for me, especially in the last 2 years, our business really transitioned more towards merchandising, specifically mm-hmm. over time, because, you know, I have a small child and a bigger child, and I homeschool, and, you know, I'm married, and I'm really traditional, so I'm that type that's like home-cooked meal every night. We all have dinner at the table. Like, I have a very structured schedule. And it cuts into my time to paint. So I'm not able to turn out paintings as much. You know, it takes me longer to finish. And I had to figure out what are some ways that I can consistently make money, but that also, you know, like, don't take me out of the house, for example. You know, it's in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. I'm not really super trying to be out and about with my kids. What are some things that I can do to make money from my business that I'm at home doing, that I'm laying in bed doing? It honestly probably took us 2 years to even get it to where we are now, and we still have a long way that we want to go. But I think that really thinking about other ways that you can make money and ways that you can make money online is everything. Mm-hmm. You know,
so
I end up...
How's that merchandising? Like, how has that shifted your business? So were you all art-based and doing, as you said, like, everything painting-related to... So what's that shift look like? Is it just merchandising? Are you teaching classes online? What does that look like for you?
So when we started out, I had paintings, I had prints, and I had earrings. And I had always had earrings that had little prints of my art on them. I've been doing those since forever. And, you know, and I'll order different shapes and symbols and paint them and whatnot. So, that's all I had. And the problem that I, you know, was running into is that, one, you want your buyers to be able to come back. So, you know, for me, the average person purchasing a painting, if they spend $2,000 with me in one, you know, in one sitting, it's hard to get them to come back. You know, like, you already spent a lot of money with me in this year. Most people are not going to buy a $2,000 painting from you every month, every other month. And so, you know, I had to think about because I need to retain these people and I need to retain their interest. So how am I going to get them to come back? And, you know, one of the ways that we had been able to get them to come back and to stay with the site is like, oh, you know, yeah, you bought this $2,000 painting for me and you love this painting. It's in your house, though, and the only people that see it are in your house. So you should get the T-shirt with that painting on it. You should get the pillows with that painting on it. You should get, you know, this, that, and the other with the painting on it. And now you can show it to other people. And now you bring me other people. And, you know, and so that transition was really, really big and was really vital for us, as well as we have to go out and interact with people. So we definitely do a lot of festivals. We do a lot of live painting. And, you know, now when I say live painting, I charge a lot to live paint. We come and we put on a show, and we really want people to see something, you know, we want them to see a process. We don't get up and just like toss some paint on the canvas and be like, voila. Like, it's a really structured, planned, you know, I know how many hours I'm painting and how long I have to make something come to life. And it's about making something come to life. We do a lot of workshops.
Do you do a similar process? I looked at, I love watching my husband when he paints live, because it is so, it will look a mess, an absolute mess. And I'm like, what is he doing? And then all of a sudden, it's beautiful. Like, at the end, it, like, it all comes together. And he was like, Erica, he's like, I've been doing this for a while. He's like, it's called showmanship.
Yes.
He's like, of course I want it to look like it's going to be a mess. You know, he's like, that's part of the show.
Yes.
For people to be like, what is he doing?
I love that you said that. I love that you said that, because, you know, live painting a lot of times is kind of like the poor man's art hustle, where, you know, people, they'll pop up and start live painting. And I remember when I first got to D.C., people weren't really doing that a lot. And so I was doing really good, and as people started seeing me do it, all of a sudden it was hard for me to get booked, because somebody would come do for free what I was charging for. But a lot of times I felt like the venues didn't really understand, like, no, I plan, like, this is a show. It's the performance.
Right.
And I'm standing in front of your people the entire evening. So if you have a poet up, for example, and your poet is trash, they're looking at what I'm doing. Your poet might be amazing, and they're connecting what I'm doing to what they're listening to. It's a whole, I can't get to the end of the show and have just an unfinished, you know, amalgamation of things kind of coming together, but nobody really understands, like, what direction we're going. That's not, there's no showmanship in that. I hate that, because I feel like it waters down the game so much. And so then when I tell people, like, what I charge for live paint, and they're just like, oh my God. But then I show them pictures of, like, no, I'll come with a blank canvas or a canvas with some colors on it and leave at the end of the night with, I could do this in 2 hours. I can do this in 4 hours. Like, this is, it's a show. It's a performance.
Which is why, and I can't think of his name, I'm drawing a blank right now, when Raheem Divine used to do his shows and he had the artist up on stage painting.
The Picasso.
Yes. And people were just like, what? And so for a while, it was like a hot thing to do. But people really don't realize that, like, yes, this is a show. Just like, you know, when people in Atlanta, they used to do it a lot with the art battles. And they would bring painters together, and they would paint live. And people were like, what? Yes. And I mean, they had personas and personalities. And again, people took art and turned it into something else and merged art and basically wrestling together. But, you know, the battle was here. Yes, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I did not understand why those types of events didn't take off in more cities. And then a lot of people can't do it.
And then they get the job. So, that's another thing.
It's
a high-end performance. Yes. And I don't think people realize how exhausting it is as well. Because, you know, I can't, like, I'm there. You're watching me. I can't be unsure. I don't have time to stop and contemplate what my next move is. Like, I have to show up ready to make it happen. And creating art is such a magic space anyway. So, you know, you have to you get on stage and you have to turn on. And there's things that can happen on a stage or in an audience that can completely impact, you know, what it is that you're creating and what it is that you're trying. You know, I've done poetry venues where the feature got up and, you know, read, or even somebody before the feature got up and, you know, read these devastating poems that changed the whole energy of the room and the whole energy of the night. You know, I'm painting this lady with lilacs and she's blowing bubbles and what have you. And everybody's getting up and reading their rape poems and stuff. And it's like, oh, this is not going to work. You know, you have to make an adjustment to pick up the energy of what's happening. I've had times where, you know, I typically try to sell the piece to somebody that's in the audience that can connect to it. But there's times where, you know, you bring a piece home and then you have to try to figure out, you know, if you're going to finish it, if you're going to be able to re-access whatever the energy was that was present when you started it. Is it going to go in that same direction? Is it going to go in a different direction? You know, it's such an emotional process. It's draining. So, you know, when I go and I spend 4 hours and I'm in front of people I'm taking in all that energy. I'm trying to communicate it onto a canvas and get finished. It's a workout. And at the end, I'm exhausted. I'm mentally and emotionally drained. You know, it's a lot of supplies because you're trying to get things done quickly. And I don't think a lot of people realize what it takes. It's, you know, right. you're basically going into a trance with, in front of all these people.
Mm-hmm. You got to find your place and bring that out. And that truly is a skill. And to be able to do that with people looking at you. Because typically when you're creating, it's like, you know, your children might be around, your husband might be around, you know, your friends might be there, you know, or family, people that you're comfortable with. But to be in a room with strangers and people you don't know, in spaces with, you never know what the energy is going to be like. So so bringing it back to like having it all. So even with all of that, you know, and balancing your work, but then also from a business aspect, being able to take the time to do the research and to acquire the skills necessary to run a successful business. So how did you all, or how do you all manage that aspect of it?
I would say that I'm probably the business person of the family, mm-hmm. which is an interesting dynamic in patriarchal America, and especially in the art world, which is a very male-dominated industry. I've been studying business since I was a child. I was raised to own a business. My dad was very into generational wealth and financial literacy and independence early. So mm-hmm. the whole time we were growing up, you know, he's read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, read this business book, read this finance book. So I was getting inundated with a lot of information, and it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I was really able to start kind of pulling things together and starting to think about how to apply these different concepts. So, you know, I think that my husband was very lucky because when he and I met, you know, and he had this house full of art and was kind of trying to figure out what to do with it, and I'm like, oh, well, I can sell this because, you know, my husband at this point is a better painter than me. He just is. And, you know, I can sell this. And it okay. helped me grow even my art of being able to look at his art and try to understand, you know, because it's a whole new audience now that I'm looking at, and it's a removed audience from myself, so it's not so personal mm-hmm. when somebody comes up and criticizes it, because it's not my painting, so they could come up and be like, I don't like it, it looks mechanical, and I'm like, neither here nor there, I could care less. It's his painting, he's not even here to receive that, versus when somebody comes up to mine, and they're like, oh, your Solange painting looks like Dennis Rodman, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so he was very lucky in that.
Okay,
That did actually happen. I did have somebody walk up and be like, what is this painting of Dennis Rodman? And I was like, oh, that's Solange. But you know what? That one was actually kind of funny because I totally could see it. I could totally see it. Like, I looked at it again and was like, yeah, I could see why you would think that this was Dennis Rodman.
Right.
But I also, like,
so
wasn't offended
where I felt
like
somebody.
I was going to change it.
I'm going to drop a gem for a listener. Again, if there's somebody out there who loves art, loves it, just absolutely loves art and loves artists, and is coming from that place of love and not a place to take advantage of artists, because artists get taken advantage of a lot, unfortunately. Exposure is not a thing, and you can't eat or pay bills with exposure. But somebody, if they want to actually make a business in the art business, and you can't draw, but you want to be in art and in the art business, artists don't like talking to people. Artists
no,
are almost
we don't.
Like engineers
we're reclusive.
And programmers in the IT field. So if you could put a buffer in there, and you want to be that buffer to talk to people's clients, you know, different things like that. Do booking
and
for
actually
artists.
Across the board, artists are notoriously mm-hmm. bad at business. We are reclusive. Mm-hmm. We like to do drugs and drink and be mm-hmm. in the corner mm-hmm. and in our own zone. It's very rare that you find an artist that really is trying to be front and center. A lot of times we gravitate towards art is because you can be amazing and be quiet in the corner. Mm-hmm. I could be at my art show and nobody knows it's me.
For anybody listening, that's a career. That is a career. Yes. Business development
and
for
it's
artists.
It's good money.
More or less like a coordinator. Not necessarily, I don't want to call it like managing artists because that's not what the person would be doing, but just somebody to help like answer their emails from their customers when they get, you know, inquiries from clients, when somebody has a complaint about something, dealing with that whole aspect.
Yes. Submitting
really
to galleries.
Amazing. Yes. On their behalf.
I also think a lot of people don't realize that art is a business, just like when you're trying to get a job at a corporation. Your resume is what gets you into certain galleries. And so, you know, I think a lot of times people think, we just paint these pictures and we toss them up in this gallery and like, woohoo, it's done. And like, no, I have a resume. I remember first coming out and, you know, I wasn't that good, but I loved it. And I was putting art up in all these cafes and I was so proud and, you know, getting into a bigger market, having somebody look at my resume and be like, all these little restaurants, these don't go on your resume. Like, this is cute and whatever, but what gallery have you shown in? And having, and you know, what school did you go to? What classes have you taken? What's, you know, and I was like, oh, you mean like a regular resume for my art? Yeah, it's a business, boo. You know, you're applying for a job. That job, you're making the gallery a percentage.
Yeah, and I remember my head saying at first, when we redid his resume, and I was like, send me your resume. So we redid it, and he was like, I just always never want to let him live this down, because I really wanted to punch him in the head when he came home. And he did it, and we were not even like a couple then. We were just friends. And he was on an interview, I will never forget, with the Washington Nationals to do graphic design and work like in their art department. And he's like, well, the man said it was going to be like a lot of work and this and that. And, you know, I don't know if I want to go do somebody else's work for 8 hours a day. I was like, what? What? Like, I just remember, like, this whole conversation, and I was like, do you know how much of a cake assignment that is for you? You could do those 8 hours with your eyes closed. That's not taxing. And then you can still come home and do what you want to do. But then you have this major league sports team on your resume that would have opened so many doors for you. You could have wrote your own ticket at that point. I was like, you already have this other big-name client, but then this gave you that corporate cosign.
Yes.
That you could have then turned that into, like, gold. And so he assumed, because at that point, there were all these different job offers coming from all these different places. So he thought that that was always how it was going to be. And then the economy kind of tanked. And then what happens when the economy tanks? That's when the first things to go.
Is art.
And then so a few years pass, and now everybody's an artist. Everybody's a graphic designer. Like, nobody cares that, like, you know, oh, you literally went to college and got a degree in this?
Yes.
Oh, well, my cousin, my uncle, my sister, boyfriend, grandmother, can do this.
Because they don't care about fonts. They don't care about, they don't know how to use Photoshop or Illustrator and things. You know, they're putting it together in Microsoft
They don't care
Publisher.
About layout and balance.
No. They don't know where the eye falls.
None of that.
It's not a
They're
journey.
Not looking at the ligatures on the font. Like, they are not that deep, and they don't care. I mean, all the science
but
that
you
goes
know,
into that.
That same thing happens when people are looking at your paintings. And, you know, that was something that I really had to learn, is that there's a difference in somebody who comes, and neither is better than the other, but there's definitely, I have people who come, and they're like, that's a pretty painting. I'll buy it. I'll put it up on my wall. And I have collectors who come, and they're like, your line work is messy, but this is going to be good in 10 years. Where's your car? Like, I'll keep up with you. And when you're there, like, you're there.
Yes.
Or who will, you know,
and
who
you know,
are really looking
thing,
for the technique.
When we started going and we started participating in hanging Foxy art in galleries and being in various shows, I had a new appreciation for it. Because all of a sudden, I would be impressed with something, and he would look at something and be looking at me like I'm crazy, and then he would sit there and explain it to me and break it down, like, why it wasn't good. You know what I mean? Or not necessarily good, but the skill level. But yes. You know, he's like, okay, so you can tell, like, this person kind of, like, went to school for it. You can look at this and tell this person is self-taught. You can look at it and tell, like, this person is new. I mean, he showed me so many things as far as art that I had no idea about. And I think even as Black people, some of us are, like, so talented. So talented. And we just need that little bit of business acumen to take our business from being mediocre to the moon.
Yes. And you know what? On top of it, I think some of us are so talented but so lazy, because it isn't
enough.
Is it enough,
lazy, though, or is it fear?
I do think that. I think it could be both, but I do think that there's
because
a lot
hard
of laziness.
To expose yourself, even with business, just even if it's not necessarily an art-based business, just with anything that is your idea that you're, like, close to, it's hard to just, like, put yourself out there.
Yes, but I also think people like instant gratification. So we want to print 300 T-shirts and sell all of them next Saturday. And that's not how it works always, you know. Like,
I mean,
sometimes...
But people look at that person that it does work for. People will look at
that
one person.
Look at.
Well, and I'm like, that person's the exception. That person's not the rule.
And then you don't know, that person might make those T-shirts, sell those T-shirts, do great off those T-shirts, and never sell another thing again. You know, they might have caught. And that's the other thing is, like, success. Whoopi Goldberg was talking about how one of the biggest lessons that she learned in her career was that success ebbs and flows. So you have to really understand the timing, and you have to set yourself up so that, like, when it's your time, you have to be ready to ride that wave. And then when it's not your time, your whole focus should be about getting ready for when it's your time again, and studying and keeping up with what's going on so you can catch the next wave.
Because we have a lot of people ask us how that works for us as a family also, especially because I'm not quite in the business full-time just yet. We're working on it. I'm like, oh, I got my timeline. I'm like, yes, because I, like you said earlier, you can only work for so long. And you gotta go. And I don't do well with it either. Because my problem is I don't deal well with inefficiency and bureaucracy and just BS in general. And I'm like, okay, so we're doing this because why? Like, I'm all about working smarter. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
like,
I'm one of those people, I will never forget, I went on an interview and the woman asked me, are you the type of person who does 8 hours of work, or are you one of those people that you can do 8 hours of work in 4 hours? And I'm definitely that 4 hour person, because I'm all about, like, okay, let me put this into a system, let me get on the schedule, let me do this, da, 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 and boom. And I will tell
you
how many
kids?
I was like that before kids. It actually has gotten me into trouble when I was being a consultant, because I would have people be like, Erica, you're working too fast. You're making the rest of the team look bad.
Everybody looks
bad.
And
I think because I'm like, because I'm very analytical and I'm very process driven. So if I see things automatically, I'm already like in process improvement mode. Like, okay, we can cut this step. We can do that. Okay, there's an easier way to do this. Or not necessarily even easier all the time, but just more efficient way.
Yeah,
how
to streamline. I'm the same way. But, you know, one thing that I want to say, too, to the people who are listening is that sometimes streamlining is a long-term process. Like, I'm always, like, when me and my husband really first started talking about our business goals and seeing, you know, we were lucky because our business goals were in sync separately. So, you know, coming together, being able to be like, oh, okay, well, let me take the things that you're trying to do and combine them with the things that I'm trying to do, but now we have to streamline it. So, you know, we've been married for 2 years. I built us both separate websites. Our website as a family is just now about to go live. Like, it took me the 2 years to really, I revisited my business plan. I had to restructure my business plan to include other people's art and include, like, well, wait a minute. And then we had a year where, you know, I started making merchandise with everybody's art on it. But, like, now it cuts, I have to pay people. And I'm having to figure out, like, well, I went to a festival before and I only had my art. That's my money. Now I'm at a festival. I have everybody's art on stuff, but I still made everything. But he still has a right to his image, to, you know, to the, to the licensing of his image. So I can't just be selling, even though we're married and the money goes back into the home, it's not beneficial for him for me to just be selling his stuff and pocketing this money.
Okay.
Like, I need
to pay him. Okay, so we're going to pause on the family business, and we are going to take a short network break, and we'll be right back with Black Talk Radio Network, Blacks in Business Radio.
I would like to invite you to join Every.Black, the premier digital marketplace and directory for Black businesses and entrepreneurs. Membership benefits include representation on 12 websites, 12 Facebook pages, and 12 Twitter accounts. Your company will also be featured in the monthly e-letter. Sign up today by typing in Every.Black. Use the discount promotional code SISI. For more information, call 253-343-7284. When it comes to promoting your business, remember Every.Black.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, and we are back, and we are talking today. Okay, so finish what you were saying about, like, incorporating your family into the business. Because a lot of times, you know, we have these conversations in different forums and in different threads online, and we talk about having a family business, and we hear the different reactions from people about, you know, working with family, and it's not a good idea, and it causes problems, and all this kind of thing. So how have you all been able to make that transition and make that leap these last 2 years and have it work, especially being a husband and wife couple? Because I know, being in that situation myself, that it's hard sometimes to, like, turn that off, you know, because there's, like, there's manager, you, and then there's, like, wifey, you, and then there's mom, you.
Oh, yes. you know, we had a situation that I think really changed my approach to the business, and that was that I went out to do a festival, and, you know, when you do the festival, it's tents and tables and wait, and you're sitting outside all day. It's exhausting. It takes a lot. You know, I'm a mom. I'm breastfeeding. It's a lot. So I'm out. I do this festival all day. The only things that sell are my husband's work. And so I come back home, and, you know, I got to get groceries. I got to get, you know, I have to take care of these basic things. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, that's fine. You can take the money and, like, take care of these things from the house. But I'm also inside, like, well, wait a minute. I kind of need a pedicure or two, and I deserve it because I sat outside all day. But it's not my money, you know, like. And so we got into this exchange about, well, whose money is it, and how does the money work? And, you know, my husband, he's a very easygoing person, so, and I'm not, you know, I'm not the type that's out buying new bags and things like that. All my money goes back into the household as well. And so, you know, he's like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just back into the household, like, take care of what you need to take care of. But, you know, for me, that's for me, it was a big turning point where I was like, no, we need to restructure our business so I can pay you and you can pay me. Where we have on paper that this is how much I'm going to receive off of these paintings. This is how much I'm going to receive off of this merchandise, and this is how much you're going to receive off this merchandise. And that's really one of the biggest things which led to us restructuring the entire business. You know, I changed the business name. I stopped us from having two separate businesses and combined all of our interests because, you know, like, I need to cut you a check. And you need to be able to say definitively, you know, yeah, I made $40,000 off selling paintings this year, and I paid out $10,000 to my art dealer, who happens to be your wife. But all of this money is still under the umbrella of our family business. And so it's good for all of us, and it's beneficial for all of us. But, you know, I also have my daughter.
The situation was a little different. Right. Okay, so tell us about that. I'll come back to... Well, our situation was different because we were friends before we were married, and we were business partners before we were married. So a lot of times people don't necessarily know that story. And so, like, we always say Foxy was officially, like, our first baby together. And it was very much when Jamal approached me to be business partners, I asked him, I was like, you know, are you sure that you want to be business partners? I said, because friend Erica and you working for me, Erica, are two different people. And it's been 10 years that we've been doing this thing together. And sometimes he doesn't always see, like, if I'm asking a question about something, like, okay, you know, I need an update on, you know, this client project, or I need to know, like, you know, we have the schedule and we have this list of projects that we have. Where are we? I need an update. And he answers me in husband mode.
Yes.
And then it's like, I'm not in husband mode. I'm in, like, CEO mode. And I need to, like, no. I was like, no, boo. Like, if we were working somewhere, I'd fire you right now. Like, no, I'm really asking for a status update. I need an update. You know?
We have those, too.
And sometimes,
my husband's a procrastinator, so I have to be like, hey, you know, get it together. I'm trying to make moves, and I need you to do these things.
Yes. So I'm just like, hello? You know, so he's just kind of, and sometimes, like, being able to turn that off, or having sitting here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I get one of my brilliant ideas, and we start having a business meeting. And people think it's maybe like, y'all have business meetings? It's like, yes, we have weekly meetings.
Oh, yes.
When things come up and we need to meet, yes, we have strategy sessions. We have design meetings. Every client we have, every project we have, everything that people see, it's like that has taken months of work. So some people,
so they don't,
you know,
realize,
like we were saying earlier, that people, you know, when people steal our work, it's like you're seeing that one image. You're not seeing everything that it took to manifest that, to get there.
To get it
so
out.
Am I angry? Yes, and it's like, you know, so are you peeved when somebody just, like, thinks, oh, well, I saw that online, I'm just going to use it? No.
Yes.
No, you're not just going to use it.
Yes.
Like, that's a lot of hard work that went into that. You know, no matter how simplistic it may look.
Like that.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, people say that to us too. They're like, oh, well, you know, you just threw your art on a bag. And it's like, no, you know, we had to find the right company. We printed bags from multiple companies. There's companies,
the right,
you know, because of the
partners.
Colors. Yes.
Yep.
The colors and whatnot, not all companies have the same printer. It's like, we went for a while, we were getting stuff and we were frustrated. We had to stop manufacturing and learn about printing so that we could then know what are the right questions to even be asking the manufacturers. Like, you know, these pillows and mock-ups and things like that, you know, we're sending them back and forth, and he's saying, I like this one, I don't like this one, lay this out one different. We're resizing things, you know, you're re-photographing your work constantly. Like, it's a lot of work. It is not just, you know, we're not just jumping on Vistaprint and making a T-shirt and then trying to sell it.
And people,
and that's
don't
a lot
realize.
Of times why I tell people we're a high-end brand. Because
from
it is
a quality perspective, because now I can even go to somebody's website. When I look at different artists, I know exactly the manufacturer they're using.
Yes, me too. Me too. And we can tell from the quality
and the color. I know where those bags came from. Well, no, my thing is just off the photo. Just off the photo alone, their merchandise photo, I'm like, I know what manufacturer, you know, what manufacturer website that is. And people think that, you know, these different sites might offer the same thing, but everybody's quality is not the same.
Yes. Yes, we use the site. When we first started out, we were doing one of those print all over sites and ordering things from them, but you know, you couldn't wash it. Lot of times, like, we would get proofs and the colors would be faded out, or you know, a lot of the sites wouldn't let us and you know, I'm gonna give this jewel, and you know, I'd be charging people consultant fees for what I'm about to say. Like, learning about drop shipping, girl.
Yes.
Drop shipping.
Not
and
a game.
And when I say that to people and they look at me and they're just like, well, what is that? I'm like, go and Google that. I'm not going to explain it to you. I'm not going to tell you how it works. I'm not going to give you anything else. Like, if learning about drop shipping changed everything, but in order to be like a quality drop shipping company, you got to order proofs from all kinds of companies. And then you have to test them, you know, because we got a sweatshirt. And it looked so fly. We washed it twice. It unraveled. You know, it faded. It shrunk. Like, you know, and you have to know these things, because then you have clients that come on your page like, yeah, the shirt was cute when I got it, but, you know, and have these listed complaints.
We stopped selling jewelry. Let me tell you, I put my jewelry on hold. People always ask me, like, Erica, what happened to the jewelry? And I was like, you know what? Adhesive is what happened to the jewelry. I was like, I found out that things... Thank God for my children playing with stuff one day.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, mommy,
give
it
to
broke.
The kids.
I'm sorry. And I'm like, oh. And I felt horrible because we had just had an event. People bought stuff. So if anybody is listening and you bought something and it broke, please send me an email, erica@myfoxy.com, and I will replace it for you. But I'm just like, I was horrified. And it literally took me a year. And I had one lady who, I love her. We are friends. We've talked on the phone now. She was actually affected in the flood in Houston. I finally was able to send her things, and I sent her some extra things, and she got it, and she called me, and she said this was worth waiting for the year that it took to get it. Because I actually told her, I said, you know, I said, I can give you your money back. I was like, I'm so sorry that, like, you know, that somebody from the team did not let you know that, you know, we were just having a problem. And I was like, you were talking to me directly. This is not like somebody else, you know, within the company. This is me. And I was like, I will take personal responsibility for that. And I'm like, but I cannot in good conscience sell you something that I would not buy, something that I would not wear, and a product that I don't believe in.
Yes, because it's, at the end and of the day, it's representative of you, and it's representative of the integrity of your company. And, you know, I feel like with every person who, even if they don't buy anything, you want them to come back. And if you sell somebody some mesh, they're not going to come back and buy some more mesh from you.
You want them to
comment on your quality.
You want them to also have a good experience with you as a brand. It's like, think of all the brands that we buy repeatedly. It's because they have great customer service. They have great quality. You know, you can tell that they care about what they're doing and they're not just out to make money.
Yeah.
And that's something that I can say definitely, like, with your work, with our work, it shows that we really put a lot of care, love, time, attention into what we're doing. And it comes across. And the success don't always happen as fast as we would like it, you know, but...
No, not at all.
What we have to do, and we get there. Because we've had people tell us to quit, like, oh, y'all been in business 10 years. How come y'all aren't famous? I'm like, is that how you think most businesses work?
Yes, that's not how business pops at all.
I was like, hello.
And a lot of times people that have that quick success, I was watching a documentary about the Oprah effect, and a lot of those businesses that she shouted out failed afterwards because they couldn't keep up with the demand.
So,
having an overnight success business is not always the best thing. You know, what
and
happens
if I got
10,000 orders tonight, even drop shipping, it would overwhelm me. Like, I would have to hire people. It would cause a back order. You know, it would cause a problem.
I can tell you, we got the subscription box. with our skincare products that we used to have. So it put my skincare business out of business. Okay? It put it out of business. And people were like, am I going to get my stuff? And I was like, I'm sorry, we had to close up. The business is gone. Because it was. You know, because it was several thousands of orders that we needed to fill, and we didn't have a means to do it.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, yes. I had no clue. And that also taught me, if we ever go back, because we do still have people after all this time, are like, you know, it's the only thing that helped my hair. It was great. It was just, and I'm like, you know, if we ever do it, we would have to tell people that this is made in small batches. Sorry, it's Luxe. And it's going to come with a luxury price tag. Because it was that daunting. It was crazy to me. And that was with me recruiting my family to help.
Yes.
And it was just, and me sitting up there showing them how to make products. You know, it was a lot. And then we
I had body products for a little while, and I was underpricing them. And so, you know, I got inundated with orders. And because I was underpricing them, I thought, somebody had told me, like, oh, you know, it's better if you sell a whole bunch cheaper. But ultimately what ended up happening was it was draining my money because there was so many orders coming in, and I was having to order so much to replace it. It just it doesn't always work out like that. Sometimes it's better to be small batches and exclusive type of brand. Because then also you look at what happens with companies like the Shea Moisturizer, the big controversy that they had. Earlier this year, as they expand and as they expand their sales base, they, you know, you have to change some of the things that you're using in your product because you need to be able to keep your costs down so that you can sell to more people. And now you have these loyal customers who feel like you have switched up on them or that you're not being loyal to them anymore. But in the end of the game, they don't understand the business side of it.
Right.
And, you know, that does happen
to a lot of brands as they grow. And it's unfortunate in certain types of business that happens too. So, and a lot of times it's like, you know, getting to that point where that brings up a good point because, and I'm going somewhere with this, I am, people often get upset because they feel like the supply chain is not black owned.
Yes.
And that a lot of black owned businesses are simply doing business with everybody else still. And it's like, okay, but we live in a global economy at this point. And the only way that any of us get to a point where we can be the supplier or be, you know, get into that distribution network is that people have to support the businesses. Or that we all need to come together to form those companies to do that so that we can circulate that money in the community.
That, you know, that's a big thing that this year especially has been a shift in focus for our business as well, in terms of going away from wanting to have that all-black business line where, you know, nothing in your business touches any hands of any business that is not by a black person. For one, because we ran into some walls in terms of, you know, there's a lot of parts of the industry that just don't have a black option. And that is what it is. There's just certain things that we just can't get done that we want to get done by somebody black, period. We just, or the level, there might be somebody black that does it, but not necessarily at the level that we need it done. You know, there might be like a black Giclée printing company, but they have the, you know, they have the 9-color printer, not the 12-color printer, and we need the 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't be loyal to black business in that instance if it's impacting my quality. I feel like black people and black business have to get away from that segregated business model, though, and thinking about, you know, as a black, I definitely will utilize black companies when I can. And, you know, when the quality is where I want it to be. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm trying to get the best merchandise possible so that I can hire somebody from my community. And it's not helpful for me to just only be able to feed my family exclusively and maybe one or two black companies that I'm able to access. It's way better for me to feed my family, access maybe two black companies, maybe five companies from around the world, but I've also hired three people that live in mm-hmm. my neighborhood. Now they're feeding their families. Like, that's better for the community than me, like, struggling to exclusively deal with black people. And I think that's right. something that we need to, like, shift our focus on and shift our – we just don't have the same type of resources like that yet. And that is something that right. we can build, but, you know, us as black businesses, we have to start thinking about that too. Like, well, now that I've gotten my business to a point, how do I pull another black business up? How do I let them now get some service from me?
I am actually – I went to an interest meeting – a couple weeks ago with the new community center here in Durham, North Carolina, and they are actually starting a membership drive to get 1,000 members this year to between now and like this time next year, having 1,000 members to start a black-owned credit union, number one. That's part one. And then part two is also to create a community development corporation so that they can do yeah. microloans and funding for businesses. And not only that, but also put like a gas station in community, buy a grocery store in a community,
yes.
and all of these things. And then do, because not only are you as a member, you're also a shareholder. So then it gets into the profit sharing. So everybody, you know, once they get up and running and these businesses start making money, you get to then share in those profits. And then automatically, when you pass, your shares and your investment then passes automatically to your children.
Yes.
And so it's starting yes. that foundation of generational wealth.
We need so many more models like that. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And that we all need to come together. And the beautiful thing about it is that you don't even have to live here in Durham, North Carolina to be a part of it. You can live anywhere.
I need that information.
Yes, ma'am.
That's our big thing. You know, generational wealth is probably the biggest thing that me and my husband agreed on in terms of even starting this business, was thinking about, you know, like our daughter is a painter as well, and she sells her mm-hmm. work in shows and galleries. She's talented on her own, but we use our connections to put her in positions to really be professional and to really get her business going. So, you know, she has mm-hmm. a clothing line that she's about to come out with. She has a kids mm-hmm. line that she's about to come out with her. She has a little merchandising line coming because we want mm-hmm. her to have her own and to be able to build her own from jump, so she's able to utilize our network to grow her own. And to think about, right. you know, we make her save her money. Her goal, she has a goal, you know, if you talk to her, she's 8 now, but she'll tell you that by the time she's 16, she wants to be able to buy an apartment complex and establish residual income. And, you know, like, so she's really focused on, you know, understanding business and understanding, you know, how does this work? You know, I take her to Vend. Mm-hmm. You know, we sit down and she does her designs and stuff, and we talk about, well, you know, how much does your supplies cost? How much do you charge per hour? And it's good for her because, you know, a lot of times we'll be at an event and she'll have her pictures up and people are like, oh, you know, that's so cute, I'll give you $25 for it. And she knows now to be like, no, I am a professional artist. I have shown in galleries in different states. My painting is $200. My painting is $300. And if they, mm-hmm. you know, and then they always look to us like we're supposed to talk her down. And we say, no, that's business. Well, she used professional supplies for this. You pay her what she's worth. You
right.
see the talent in it. Pay her what she's worth. Pay her what she's valued. And, you know, adults struggle with that. But, you know,
right.
I'm sure that there's people who are listening now that have a hard time with, you know, with their value. And especially when you are in a struggle. You know, I relayed on my Facebook page once talking about in terms of pricing and the knowledge of your industry and what have you. I was talking about a time where it was just me and her, and we were super struggling. And, you know, so you're out there, and you're selling a painting for $100 because you're just like, I need to eat today. You're selling something for $40. And, you know, I just got to a point where I was fed up with that because I was just like, if I sell something for $40 today, we can eat for 2 days. I could sell this painting for $300. We could eat all week. And, you know, I held out, and it was scary. It was the scariest thing I ever did. And we went through this whole event, and nobody bought anything. And I got to the end. Finally, at the end, somebody came and bought the painting. And
you
I
know,
was freaking out inside.
That you just told that story, because I can honestly say over the last 10 years of being in business, it's a roller coaster. It's not always an easy thing to be an entrepreneur. It's not always an easy thing to have your own business. And I have learned that doing things out of desperation will always take you two steps back.
It doesn't work.
When you're bringing that desperate energy. Yes.
Ooh, they
and it doesn't
away.
Last. Whatever you
no.
build in those desperate times, it does not last. But if you just hold fast to like your vision and your dream and just really settle in your spirit that like, no, I'm going to charge my worth, and everything is always going to work out to your highest good. Always.
Yes.
Even our struggles, because we learn something from them. But just holding fast to that, things will work out. They will. And it might, like you said, it came down to the end of the night that you sold and got what you needed to get.
Yes.
And think about
and
how you would have been
had
feeling.
A better oh, man. Because I'd have been trying to figure out what's next 2 days later versus 2 days later. We still have food, and I'm still thinking about what's next, but not from a stressful point. You know, I think sometimes, too, with business, it's okay to start real small and have something really small come across really well versus having a whole bunch of things that are not well put together. In terms of, you know, for the example that I could give is like with our, as we go into more of our home design merchandise and what have you, and it's little by little, you know, people are always hitting us up like, do you have shower curtains? Do you have towels? Do you have bed sheets? Do you have... And I told them, you know, oh, yeah, we'll have that in February. We'll have that in April. We'll have that in...
Yes.
And people are like, well, why don't you have it now? And it's like, well, right now, like when we first started out, all we had were pillows. And we took time to make different kinds of pillows and sell different types of pillows and take them different places, and you get feedback from different people who are looking at them. We first came out with them, and we priced them too low. And we had a burst of sale, and I ended up in the hole because I had underpriced them. And so, you know, I had to, like, readjust the prices and come out again. And then there's some pillows that sell better than others. There's some designs that we got that just, like, people didn't really respond well to. And it's like, okay, well, we'll not print that one again. We're printing this one. And then once we got that kind of perfected, it was better for us to only offer, like, here's this one pillow, and it's good. And we know that this is quality. And here you can go on our site, and we have, like, it's very well put together where you can see where the pillows are versus if I had gotten pillows, cups, shower curtains, like all this other stuff, and we don't know what works. We don't know what lays out right. We don't know what people, you know, are attracted to, because some things don't. Some things look great on a cup that don't look good on a pillow. Some things look good on a painting that don't translate well to a T-shirt, you know, and...
Right.
Really taking time to just, like, you know, I know a lot of times with business we're overwhelmed by all of our ideas, and like, write all those ideas down and then pick the one that is most feasible that you can do well and work on that one piece and then use
and
that one piece to bring up another.
Right. And it is a matter of learning the industry, because like you said, all of a sudden you start to learn that different people have different printers, people use different inks, people use different fabrics, and printing on different fabrics, things look different. Things don't always translate well to everything. And just learning about the different manufacturers. And it's okay to, like, start out with a cheaper version of something.
Yes.
And then as you make money, you improve. You make improvements.
You can make it
better. But just start where you are. Right. And I tell people all the time, it's like, just start where you are. And my husband gets on me all the time, because he was like, you just give people away way too much information. He was like, you overshare, you give away just everything, you know? And I'm like, but that's just who I am at the end of the day. But it's like, you ask me a question, and I'm like, okay, do you really want, like, how much information are you trying to get? Like, where are you in your process?
I have to give this all to you.
You know? Yeah, it's like, okay, so if you're at the beginning, I can make some suggestions to you, you know?
Yes.
if you've already started and you're kind of retooling and tweaking to elevate it, okay, I can talk to you about that too, because we have made a lot of mistakes and we have wasted money and time and partnered with the wrong people and the wrong manufacturers. And we've done all that, been there, done that,
and we end up consulting them. Yes. I know we did this, and that's the other thing too, is that, you know, knowing how to sell what you do specifically is everything. I know we get invited to do a lot of pop-up shops, and one thing that we have run into in the last year is what happens when you're embarking on a market that's not necessarily been previously explored. And
kick the door down. And I will tell you, I'm a credit that to Honest Burrell. Honest Burrell said that last night. That is her thing. She was like, do not just open the door. Don't crack the door. She was like, you kick it down, because as soon as other people see you doing it, you want
to
be so far ahead of them that they can't catch up, though.
Yes. Yes.
That you're the expert now.
Yes. And that's definitely like one of the things that we're running into now, is that as we diversify, we get invited to a lot of, you know, pop-up shops and events where they don't really know what to do with us, where, you know, they call us and they're like, oh, you know, can you come put up art at our pop-up shop? And I'm like, nah, because your pop-up shop audience doesn't spend $1,500 on a painting. I'm a fine artist.
Right.
I'm not a corner artist. And they don't understand that.
Not only
that, they don't understand
the
art market.
They want you there to make their event fly, though.
Yeah, but they're like, oh, hopefully somebody will buy. And you're just like, well,
like,
I'm not coming
like, no,
for
you
hopefully
just
somebody
to be cool.
will buy.
I'm not bringing it to be cool. But really,
that's,
we're going to pause right there. That's a great place to stop for a second. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back. We are on Black in Business Radio with Black Talk Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Hello, and we are back with Blacks in Business Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network. And so what you just said was so key. And I loved, you know, that you were saying that people invite you, and it's okay to say no, to know who your audience is, and to know, you know, and sometimes we do have to think outside the box, because maybe a demographic that we didn't think was our demographic just might be.
Yes.
So it's a matter of being able to just vet those experiences and those opportunities to find the ones that are right fit. And there might be sometimes where we go to a place and we think it's going to be a hit, and it's not.
And it's
not. And then
not.
We have to just assess, like, okay, what happened here, you know? And just really being comfortable with who your brand is.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And making adjustments, you know, I think that that's key, too, is being really open to make adjustments and to assess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of things that are causing, that could cause issues, you know? Sometimes it's that you're just not in the right place. Sometimes it's not the right group of people. Sometimes it's not the right it's not the right night. It's not the right venue. I would caution people too, when you're doing events that are other people's events, when you're going to their festivals, first of all, people, you know, what you're paying in your festival fee, you should be able to triple. So if somebody is charging you $600 to VIN, like, my first question is like, so I'm gonna make $1,800. And
right.
You can tell by how the person responds whether or not they're expecting you to pay for their event, or whether or not they really believe that they're going to bring people, enough people to, for you to make that kind of money. You know, you can really tell whether people understand the business that you're in, even in a basic sense. And, you know, I think a lot of times I end up having to explain to people, like, when I'm saying no, and they're just, and they're trying different ways to figure out how to accommodate, and I'm trying to explain to them, like, well, this is the type of audience that purchases the type of work that we do. This is the types of things we bring to the table. You know, like, we had a pop-up shop where they wanted us to come hang up art, but she didn't want us to bring any of our merchandise. And, you know, I was like, well, no, we're not interested in that. And she, you know, she was like, why not? And because y'all are having a party. And in your opening party, it's at the average party, most people might spend $100-$150 buying, like, clothes and jewelry and things like that. But, like, what are the chances that somebody is going to spend $2,000 tonight? Is that in your audience? Are these, like, corporate people? Are these art collectors? Because, like, just the average person that likes a painting here and there doesn't necessarily have $1,000 in one night to just drop on a painting. And then, you know, that's when a lot of times people who have events want to start talking about exposure, and exposure don't pay no bills. Like,
not at all.
You can build your own exposure and those type of things, and it's okay to be like, no, I don't need exposure from you. Me passing out,
and we're not coming to be the entertainment or the cool backdrop.
Yeah, not for free. Like, if you want me to come just hang up paintings and kick it, like, that's cool. I'll come for $150. Like, I need my time to be compensated for. I'm not, and it's okay to stick to that, you know. So we told her no. We walked out, and then she called back and was like, "Yeah, you know, come and figure it out and set your stuff up." And we set up, and then we left a little later because it just wasn't put together in a way that was conducive for how we wanted to represent our business. And that's okay. You know, like, sometimes you put some energy in and you assess, and then you step back. And, you know, we have to start to remaneuver now when these opportunities approach us, what we're saying to people. And definitely people are very put off by me when they contact me and they're like, oh, you know, can you come hang up some art here, or come do this? And the questions I ask and the times I'm just like, well, no, that's not beneficial for us. And, you know, they'll try to talk us into it and be like, well, our last artist was here and they sold a piece. And I always ask them, well, how much did their piece cost? Well, it was $200, so we're not the same type of artist. I'm a fine artist. I sell art in galleries. My average piece is $1,000, my smallest pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a different caliber of artist. And if you're looking for an artist who sells $200 paintings, like, more power to you, but that's not me. And I'm not going to come.
And we've had people be very put off by the fact that I do all of the booking and scheduling. And they're like, well, we want to talk to the artist. And I'm like, okay, but I'm the business manager. So
yes, we get that all the time.
You want the artist? You have to talk to me, though. You know, and they were very like, well, who does he think he is type of thing. And I'm like, okay, well, good luck with that.
We're not desperate. We know what we're worth. Yes, we get that a lot of times, too, where somebody will call about one of James's paintings and want, you know, background, this, that, and the other, and he can provide some of that. But at the end of the day, I'm the one who's going to send you the invoice. I'm the one who's going to make sure that it gets paid in. I'm the one who's disseminating, like, the checks and all of that. I'm the one who pretty much prices everything at this point, you know, and he deflects to me now. He'll be like, well, you know, my wife, like, he'll talk a little bit. He'll tell you the story behind it, and then he'll disappear and be like, you know, they'll be like, I want to buy that. He's like, talk to my wife. He don't run no credit cards. He's not really trying to do interviews. He doesn't, you know, he's not, he'll hand you his bio and walk away. He's not, you know, he's just not that type. And I think that people have to respect that of artists. Not everybody is in front of the crowd, in front of the camera type of person. And if that's your personality, that's fine. You know, you get somebody to represent you, or you figure out, you know, how to run your business in a way that's beneficial to you.
Right. I mean, and I think people really, everything is a business. And it's okay to, even if you're small, even if you're just starting out, it is okay. And you have permission to operate as if you are a big business, if you're a professional. Why? Because you are a professional. You are running a business. And people just feel like, but it's just my little side hustle. It's okay. But I'm pretty certain deep down that's not what you want it to stay.
to operate like a business. And people get, you know, different, like, agreements from us and, you know, quotes and everything branded. And they're like, you know, they send me a message back and they're like, wow, this is not what I expected. And I'm like, what did you expect? I'm like, it's a business.
Not business.
And
yeah,
I'm
it's
very
not
much about that.
But, you know, it takes a lot of time to develop that, too. You know, I think that I do want to be fair and say that, too, that, like, getting logos and getting everything branded, getting everything, like, cohesive where, like, you request an invoice and it's sent to you immediately. You can – your options mm-hmm. are ready. You go on the site. You mm-hmm. can, like – it takes a lot of work and a lot of time to get all of those kinks ironed out and get everything in line. But at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Yes, and also sending everybody, I don't necessarily like the word contract, because contracts are only good, as Dame Dash says, if you're taking somebody to court. But having an agreement in place,
yes.
because it outlines everything. It's one thing to have a conversation with someone, and you all come to an agreement. It's another thing to put it in writing, and everybody can see what the deliverables for the project are going to be, what the parameters are going to be, you know, what it is, everybody, that what the expectations are on all sides.
Yes.
You know, and what the repercussions are if one of those things isn't met. What happened?
Yes. Yes.
And the moments that we didn't do that, because we might have got comfortable with somebody, you know, you're talking to somebody, and all of a sudden you're like, ooh, we're girlfriends. No, we're not. No, we're not.
All of a sudden you're not getting paid on time. And
right.
Yeah, no. No, we had to do that. So we had to go into contracting everybody with, because we started taking payments. And, you know, people will make two payments, not make another payment for 2 years, then call you 2 years later talking about they want to come pick something up. And I was just like, I moved. I sold that joint. Like, and then I want my money back for the payments. Well, nah, I haven't even heard from you in 2 years. Like, where have you been? And getting into those type of situations, like, we did the same thing. We had
and
to
we
start
charge
really,
a fee
like,
now.
Everything in writing. Oh, girl, I'll
if
fail
we,
your
if
stuff.
We
I'm
start
like,
a,
I don't hear from you.
Yes, and people get really upset about it, but it's like if we're working on a project together and we're spending this time creating this custom piece for you, whatever it may be for, and you disappear, as it says right there in the project agreement. Right.
Right.
I mean, now there's a project reinstatement fee. That's what we started doing because your project was abandoned.
Yes. Yes, we do that,
you know,
too. I'd be like, oh, if you haven't made a payment in 30 days and we haven't heard from you, it goes back on the shelf. Like, sorry, but
right.
we can't, you know, I'm counting on, because, you know, I try to explain to people, too, like, you know, when you're making payments on a painting, we're counting on that. That
right.
$100 that's supposed to come in by the first is a group of money that's supposed to come in by the first, because we have bills
that
we have to pay.
We are supporting our family and running our business.
And
that's
right.
something
contact
that I don't think people
service.
See. Right. Right. It's like, okay, do that with your light bill. But you're not going
right.
to do that.
And tell them that you got
that. Do that,
that
with
cool.
the water. Try to do that at the gas station.
Yes. We have to
it's
start
like
holding
no
the customers accountable for being
yes.
respectful to the independent business as well. And that doesn't mean that, you
yes.
know, as a business owner, you have to be rude or anything. But, you know, you have to be very firm.
Mm-hmm.
And establishing your standards. You know, I compare everything to Macy's. I'm always like, well, how is Macy's doing this? Because you can't go to Macy's and be like, I want these shoes. I'm going to make payments on them but not show back up. Like, if you put something on layaway and you stop making your payments after 30 days, it goes back out. And you don't
on
return
the shelf,
it back.
That's it.
You don't, even if you show up with your receipt 2 years later, Kmart did not hold it for you. That's not what they
right.
do. If you put something in a storage facility, you pay monthly on that storage. So if you're not making those payments like that, you're not paying for us to hold it, and we're not going to hold it. I'm not obligated to do that, you know, and, like, really letting people
and
understand,
you, don't get,
you know,
and
you're going to treat my
like
business the way
you don't
the way
get
you
upset
treat
or rude with
business.
Them when that happens.
Yes.
So it's just, it's that same mentality. It's like it's a business. And we all, even when we're doing business with one another, need to also understand that and conduct ourselves in a very professional manner. And it's like, you know, if you promise somebody something and you can't get it to them, communicate with them. Don't
yes.
just leave them wondering what happened. Like,
what
communicate
happened?
And tell them.
Because yes.
we all understand that we have lives and we have families and we have other obligations, and things happen, especially when we're mommy multitasking.
Yes, you and know, sometimes, I mean, you like, have to take an L, too. I just had a client that ordered a bunch of pairs of earrings and a gicle, and I had to replace. I had, like, three back-to-back bending events and sold out of everything, and then I had to replace the printer cartridges, and the place I usually get them from didn't have them, so I had to order them third-party. And so as soon as I realized all this was happening, she had said that she wanted a T-shirt. So I went ahead and ordered her a T-shirt and had that sent and sent her a message like, it's going to be like 2 or 3 weeks before your earrings and stuff come because I've got to get all of these pieces together. So I already sent you something that you said you wanted in the future because I'm trying to maintain you as a customer. And like, yeah, I got to eat this $30. But like, that's cool because at the end of the day, like once she gets her package, she's excited because she got her package. I threw in a couple little extra pairs of earrings. It's the holidays for her to maybe give to some friends. And she's got the T-shirt already. But I guarantee she'll come back and buy another one. Or I mean, I hope that she'll come back and buy another one or buy something else because even though it took forever, she was constantly engaged. You know, I was constantly in contact with her, constantly letting her know what's going on, but did other things to let her know that she was valuable for me as a customer. And, like, long term, that $30 that I had to go ahead and, like, just sit on for a minute and go ahead and eat is long term. Like, that's going to come back for me.
Right. I mean, a good customer service experience is everything. You know?
It's everything.
And sometimes that right there alone, how, you know, receptive you are, how you answer people, how you interact with them, just those little things makes all the difference in the world. All the difference in the world. And that's something that we can also work on. And even being a business owner, sometimes we are offended. We are. But we have to check ourselves and say, okay, you know what? Customer service comes first. And I cannot say this as like Erica everyday person. No, this is my brand and my business.
Yes.
Let me put on that brand persona and answer this person's question, you know?
Yes.
Or respond to this. Yes.
And they will.
And even if somebody else may be frustrated with you. Yes. And if somebody's frustrated with you, that's okay too. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, that's when you use your empathy and your compassion and say, okay, if you were on the other side of that, and you would, what would you want somebody to say to you? How would you want a business owner to deal with you in those moments? So the last thing, haters. So I had this thing, and I don't often agree with Steve Harvey, but okay, so allegedly, I'm going to say allegedly because I did not check to see if he actually said this, but I'm going to read it anyway. He said, as far as haters, people are going to be leaving your life and betraying you and speaking bad about you. That's all part of leveling up. Hate is a great sign that you are doing something right most times. You are going to encounter opposition. This is very normal. Pay attention to it. Just keep leveling up. There are always levels of consciousness. People 1 minute say they love you, and the next minute they betray you, stab you in the back. People will talk about you with the same lips that they used to kiss you with. Keep going. Stay consistent no matter what. Stay on your pivot, which are the laws and principles of nature. And just watch the people come in and out of your life, and those that are truly going to love you and grow with you are going to be there when it's all said and done. Stay rooted in truth and objectivity. And no matter what the world says, the world is oftentimes lying. So separate yourself from those lies and just stay positive and consistent, and the haters will become your footstool.
Yes, that's church right there.
Because at the end of the day, like, we all know that. And I said to someone recently, I said, look at as popular as Beyonce is. People love to hate her.
Awful.
I mean, do you think she cares? I mean, do you think she is at home reading her feed, caring about what that one person or that handful of people said that don't like her?
Right.
I think absolutely not. Right.
I noticed, you know, that haters, I had an influx of haters just today, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Okay, so yes, tell us about that. You know what? It's funny is we just dropped a new product line. So we just put out a new faith-based line. My husband James does a lot of spiritual paintings, people praying, pastors preaching, deacons and pastors studying, ladies in the church crowns and things of that nature. And so we just put together a line that's specifically faith-based, that, you know, when we go, we do a lot of church events and whatnot, and so we wanted to have something that's specifically for that demographic of people. And so, you know, we've been working really hard on it, and we've been putting it together. We took, you know, maybe 13 of our favorite images, and you know, we put them out there, and the responses on my page and in my inbox today have just, it's just a lot of, you know, I had a lady come on to make like a real miscellaneous comment about how she doesn't like certain type of t-shirt styles and what have you, which was like not necessary for her to put on my page. I had another person who posted something on my page about how he hasn't received his order yet, but he hasn't ordered anything. Like, he has consistently, he'll come on and be like, oh, you know, I just want this, give it to me. And it's like, oh, you need to buy it. You know, people sent me messages talking about, you know, I'm misleading the community with this Jesus stuff and this, that, and the other. And but like, it was such an influx that I was like, oh, this is obviously reaching y'all. It's obviously like, as you guys see how we're repositioning our business and seeing the direction that we're going, it affects people, and it makes them look for reasons to try to break it down. I had a friend recently who her mom purchased a pair of my earrings from her for the holidays. And, you know, when I saw this friend, I hadn't seen her in a long time, and she had all this criticism for me. And she, oh, well, you know, I wore them out one time, and they got messed up. And I looked at him and was like, but they're not messed up. And she was like, oh, well, you know, I don't, it's probably just the atmosphere here in this city. And I was like, well, I sell these earrings across the country, across the world. Like, I just shipped some of these earrings. A sister in England just wore them in a commercial. Like, what are you talking about? I'm clear about the quality of what I send out, but a lot of times people just want to criticize so that they want you to feel like y'all are still on the same level. And it's okay to be like, no, we're not. I worked on my business. I worked hard for it to look like this and to come across like this.
Right. I mean, we had somebody, I know recently we were doing a sale for some things, and there was one lady that was really adamant about, you know, she made her purchase and she never got her file. And she kept saying it. And I went and I checked, and I was like, oh, my gosh, she canceled the order. And so it's like, you know, what do you do in those instances? So it's like, okay, so you could, on the one hand, put the person on blast and embarrass them, or you, again, you take that step back and you think about your brand and what your brand represents, and then you respond accordingly. And I just very kindly said, okay, I reviewed your order. Please check your inbox.
Right, but and that's
and then
sweet.
I sent her a message behind the scenes that says, okay, you canceled your order. That's why you did not get the file. If you would like to complete the order, then you can get the file. You know?
Right. But you know, a lot of times, too, it helps to sit down. Yes. And, you know, I'm starting to really sit down and assess, depending on who it is, why their energy is coming across like that. Because, like, just miscellaneous Mary Sue, you know, giving me a bad review or something, and she didn't even buy anything. Like, I had somebody do that recently, like, poorly rate my page, who's never purchased anything from me. And, you know, and my response to that is I just said underneath, like, well, you've actually never purchased anything, but thanks for the two, you know? Like, okay.
Right.
But thinking about what is somebody's mindset when they're engaging with you like that? Because that has absolutely nothing to do with me. And, like, the conversation I had with my friend about my earrings, like, at the end of the day, I had to assess, like, okay, so this is not, for one, feedback that I asked for, or feedback that's, like, that's relevant to what I do. Like, where is this person coming from? Why are they coming at me like this?
But, you know, I think the key in those moments is to not get stuck there. Because we could be in a room of 100 people, and we'll focus on that one person that has something negative to say, when really we need to be focused on the 99 people
that have good
that loved whatever it was. You know, that
or
positive.
Or even the two. You know, because we always have people when we go to festivals, too. that come up and they'll be like, with the pillows, for example, they'll be like, well, why don't you guys just sell the pillowcases? And the implication is that it must be cheaper if you just sell the cases, but they don't, you know, they don't understand the manufacturing process.
The pillowcase is not just doing the case itself, which, you know, I can speak on that. Is not any cheaper.
It costs actually $2 to stuff this pillow. What you're paying for is the case. Letting people know, like, it's not even necessary for you to come. And you don't even have to say that to them, like, it's not necessary for you to come and try to critique my business like that. But that goes back to being strong and firm in who your brand is and just being able to respond, like, we're a luxury brand. You won't find this pillow at Ross. You won't find anything like this. A big thing for us, too, is letting people know, like, well, you're also paying for the image, because this is not a stock image that we just snatched off of Google. This is not a, just an Adinkra symbol that we got off Google or a Virgo symbol that we just got off Google and put on a pillow. This is something that was painted, that is licensed to this artist. This artist makes money as well as the manufacturing cost and what have you have to be covered. Like, this is not just like a general thing that you're getting.
Because it's a business. Once again, it's a business. And that's something that a lot of times when people ask, too, even for, Foxy merchandise and products, people often ask, well, why is it priced like this? And I'm like, because you're paying for the art.
Yes. It's the image.
You're
the
paying
image
for
the value. 99% of the haters don't know business.
That was hand-drawn. You know, like, some of these started out as paintings, and then we digitally rendered them. You know, we put them on the computer and redid them. And I was like, that in and of itself is a process.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And I'm like, so that's what you're paying for, is the fact that it's art. Yes, I understand that everybody now is doing things with our imagery on it, and when I say ours, I mean the community.
Mm-hmm.
Your image is stolen more than anywhere.
I'm like, that's Foxy. What,
girl? That thing has gone viral, which is why we finally just give people what they want. Just give it to them. Just let them have it. Like, look, we're gonna sell you the license, and here you go. We're gonna discount the license. Several hundreds of dollars from what we would typically do. Just, here you go.
But that's a good lesson in making an adjustment in business, because,
how many years we sat on it?
Cease and desist and fighting and going back and forth and all of that, and then having to be like, okay, so this doesn't work. It's time consuming.
Nope.
It's ridiculous. How can we shift to make that? So obviously they want it.
We were just like,
so
if we can't beat them,
how
join
do we
them.
Let them have it? But we need to make sure we make our money and fine. And we have to make those adjustments. You have to study and you have to learn and figure out, I'm sure that when you guys first started that wasn't even maybe on your radar to even think about doing. But as business progresses and different things are happening, you got to be able to really shift and to quickly, study and decide, I didn't realize that my business was going to pop. I didn't realize that licensing was going to be such a big thing for us. I had no concept of licensing.
Oh, my God!
Licensing has changed our business completely.
We were so scared of that, to be honest. We were so, because of just everything that happened, and even now, we still have people that go to people that they know bought the images from us, the illustrations, and they want them to sell them their license and their illustrations. Even though it clearly says you cannot resell the raw file.
Right.
It's like, do whatever you
want
with it. Put it on the finished product. But we know somebody's going to do it. So they're doing it right now.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Doing it right now. But word is on the street now, because somebody did comment, and I had to laugh, and I actually screenshotted it and sent it to Jamal. And I said, look what they said. And he was like, are you serious? They were like, ooh, y'all using her image? You better be careful, because she will send you a cease and desist. I commented on
it. I said,
yes, she will. And she is me.
Tag
but you can
heartbeat.
Buy it right here. Right. And I tell people think we go looking for it. I say, y'all have no idea. We've been doing this for 10 years. There are people that recognize our art off jump. And they will email us links. They will take screenshots and send me emails. I think people stay in our inbox like, this is your stuff. I know this is your stuff. Because it has a certain look.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
very
and people
stylized.
Tell us. Yep. I think every day, I think people don't realize how many messages we get. Like, we could literally hire somebody to just do that, which is why we now hire the service.
Yes.
You know, because it is a full-time job. Well,
yes,
we spent 2 hours.
Said he does that. Yes, we did. We went hard. Oh, this was a great conversation,
so
girl. This is what our inboxes are like.
And we are going to thank everybody. We're going to thank Scotty and his awesome BlackTalkMediaProject.org and the Black Talk Radio Network. Also, we want to say thank you and send a big shout out to Brother Robert and Cece, who are here every Thursday. And thank you for letting me come on every third Thursday of the month with Blacks in Business Radio. And we will talk to you all next week. We are out.